dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello everyone and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 268 and we're feeling great. It's your boy Ify Whiteyway in the studio with my friends. So let me introduce you to Dams. First up we have the King of Christmas, the Christmas Daddy himself, everyone's favorite critic. If you don't like him, fight me. It's Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
I'll tell you what's good, Ify. Dave White dug into a really great cookbook called Dory's Cookies from the legendary Dory Greenspan. Ooh. And made some vanilla sablé cookies. What is a sablé, you ask? Because I certainly didn't know. It's kind of a sandy, you know?
Okay.
But it is very buttery. It's not dry inside. And it's crusted with that sanding sugar, that very like crystallized yes. sugar that the crunches when you bite it. Man, these were some amazing cookies. And just, you know, we've been trying to do this thing where one of us, and I've actually done my own at this point, but I'm sure he'll do most of them, will make a new cookie recipe on Fridays to watch Great British Bake Off and enjoy cookies. And these were the ones that he did last week, and they were sublime.
You Ooh. Describing those cookies just made me understand mukbang. As yeah. an entire genre.
Look, yeah.
I'm probably that saying good. That wrong because I've never heard it said. But that's the videos where they watch people eat. Those sound delicious. Mm-hmm. Again, once again, cheers to you on your choice of husband.
Yeah. Yes, I win.
Nailed it.
Yeah. I know. Anyone who's diving into cookbooks for new food experiences, 10 out of 10, will husband again.
no notes.
Yeah, yeah. But you know who does have notes? Well, it's the super producer, festival programmer, queen of the Midwest herself, Drea Clark. What's good?
What's good with me is not as delicious as with Alonzo, but when we got onto this Zoom, or studio Zoom, as I like to think of them, I said I was anxious to discuss this because it's consummate small talk. You guys, what's good with me is all of my COVID accoutrement, which Ooh. Is I got a bivalent booster, the Omicron booster.
Nice.
Oh, so yeah. I'm like 5 shots in now, feel like, you know, master of my own universe. As
when you
I
get
should.
That second card for the, your second vaccine card, that's a year you've
Can
really
Can I tell
arrived.
You how frustrated I was? Because as you remember, my home was broken into and someone stole my car and my purse in the, like, in June. They stole my vaccination card. So I had to get a whole new card this time, but whatever. I'm fine.
Because everyone's asking for them. You know, you really, it's a hot item.
Constantly. So I've my new booster and then I'm getting ready to go. I'm producing something that's shooting in New York this month. And in preparation for that, I was like, oh, I'm going to have a mask on for longer than I normally do. So I got like this Velcro fabric strip thing that like, so you don't have to keep your mask on your ear because I use a KN95 mask. Mm. It like puts it around the back of your head. And then I also today in the most satisfying and maybe the most Drea Clark of activities to consider this fun. Did I look up online the new expiration dates of all my COVID home testing kits? I did. I did.
They will die on you faster than you think. I have learned that the hard way.
They extended a bunch, and I haven't paid for any yet. I got so many. I got all of the government free ones when they were sending them. So I got my Sharpie out. I looked at the PDFs. I updated my expiration dates. I mean, I'm hearing it now. I'm hearing that this is what I'm excited about. That's fine. We all have our joys.
This is how we live now.
These are fine.
Life's simple pleasures. Some
yes. I have a little plastic back of the head extender that does the same thing.
Yeah.
Stop your ears, but yours sounds schmancier with the Velcro.
Ooh, okay.
We'll see. We're hoping. Schmancy's what I'm going for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of schmancy, we have a schmancy guest.
Yes, we do.
Artist, writer, co-host of the podcast Attack of the Queer Wolf. And just wanted to put this out there. They are the co-producer and interviewee of Queer for Fear. Nay, Beaver, what is good?
Yeah. Yay. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh,
I'm very happy to be here. Kind of piggybacking off of Drea with the COVID stuff in one way, I had really forgotten how wonderful it is to go to dinner with a friend.
I
go back and forth on whether it's okay to even do that, but I went to dinner with a friend. I went to Masa in Silver Lake. Oh my God, the ambiance, the food, my friend like sitting across from me, us laughing, like I felt drunk afterwards. It felt so good. Like we just laughed so much. The food was amazing. And I was like, wow, I really have missed this, but didn't really, I mean, of course I've thought about it, but it just, I didn't know how much I missed it till I did it again. I still feel so energized from it. And that was, it was days ago at this point.
So what you're saying is thank God for COVID. That's what I'm hearing. Thankfully, we've all had to go through this for the beautiful new perspective and all the art that's going to come out of it, right?
I am not thankful for any of my problems and who they've made me. I'm like, I actually would rather be ignorant and the least resilient person ever because I've never gone through anything, but it's just like not the truth.
To pizza with friends. Iffy, what's good with you? Yes. Oh, we were almost in sync, Alonzo.
Yeah. You know, you almost made it happen. What's good with me is, you know, I got the Marvel versus Capcom 2 1-Up arcade cabinet. What makes it important is because of those two giant companies that you hear me say in the title, the game hasn't been reproduced in some years, but it was like the arcade classic for millennials, and then Arcade 1-Up went ahead and released it, and of course they sold out really fast, and through a lot of struggling and fighting, it's there. It's there and it's good. So there's that. But what's good that people actually care about is the new season of The Challenge started, and we're in. It's great.
You are contractually not allowed to mention that without pointing out that I am your godmother who introduced you to The Challenge.
Yes,
bringing it up.
Yeah. I'm definitely locked in. And so before, you know, I'm a newbie to Challenge. I started with All Stars, and that's when we first talked about it. Went to Challenge USA, which was all the CBS shows. And then we went back to Rivals so I can see the original Sin, which is Johnny Bananas taking that money for himself. And then we just finished up Dirty 30 which is, oh boy, that is all of the mess you want. You know, there's someone being called the N-word and then they don't appear. And then that is the person who somehow wins and production didn't think to switch that out for any reason whatsoever. But, you know, it's it's MTV, it's Viacom. And, you know, that's all I'm gonna say about that.
I have a question about the arcade cabinet. Are we talking about like an actual big clunky arcade game of yore that you have now purchased and resides in your home?
I wish, with a nice CRT, but Arcade 1-Up reproduces them and they're more home friendly, I'll say. So you'll see, I just tweeted out me just not letting my daughter win against me. She has to learn the hard way. She'll get good one day and then she'll beat me. And that's when I hand her the keys to the house.
Circle of life.
But yeah, so it's like, it fits in a corner and it looks more like decor, nerdy decor, than an actual like gigantic arcade box. But let's keep it going, because today, speaking of games and puzzles, we're reintroducing ourselves to that fine line between pleasure and bane by watching the new Hellraiser movie. Then we're going to reintroduce ourselves as freaky Cenobites. I've been thinking about it for way too long. You better believe it. But first, it's time for Itadic, our movie news segment that stands for Is This Important? Do I Care? Where we go through the week's movie news and decide amongst ourselves if it's important and if we care. So let's kick it off with Harrison Ford joining the MCU. The passing of actor William Hurt earlier this year left the fate of MCU character Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross in question. Now, that question has been answered. Harrison Ford will take on the role in at least two upcoming films, Captain America, New World Order, and Thunderbolts, both scheduled for 2024. This is on top of Indiana Jones 5, where the 80-year-old actor will reprise one of his two most famous roles. Is this important? Do you care?
I'll say I'm a little surprised just because it seems like that Disney, I mean, more in the Star Wars realm than in the MCU realm, has been the place where no performance dies ever. You know, James Earl Jones just sort of signed off on them AI-ing Darth Vader in his voice forever. We've seen, you know, like posthumous Princess Leia and, you know, Grand Moff Tarkin from, you know, Carrie Fisher and Peter Cushing, respectively. So I just figured somewhere there was a vault where they had a 3D model of William Hurt's head and they were just going to fake his voice forever. But I guess in some places at Disney, they actually do replace people.
What that tells me is they got Harrison Ford for cheaper than they would have gotten the CGI of this. It wasn't a bummer for me because it reminded me that William Hurt passed away. And then it reminded me that William Hurt was in the MCU. Another sort of bummer. Like, I mean, William Hurt had bills. Everybody does. Apparently, so does Harrison Ford. It's fine. He does.
Look, Laurence Olivier, Laurence Olivier was in Inchon. Arthur Welles was the voice of a planet in the animated Transformers movies.
That's right. No, again, I'm all for all of it.
So why not, you know?
Do anything. You know, certainly don't hire a lesser known, interesting character actor to come in. Harrison Ford needs that support. And I'm glad Marvel gave it to him.
It's very interesting. Like I get why we're at this place. It has become a new wing in the House of Nerdom to really kind of like look at all the moving parts of the production of these films. And it's really starting to feel like sports in a real big way, where it's like, all right, we lost Hurt, but you know, we got the trade, we got Harrison Ford, and you know, I can't wait to see him out in the field and see what he does with the jersey. But it is, you know, it's not important and I kind of care, and it's, like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm at the end of my rope on this stuff. I think I'm just deep, heavily in it. And I say that as a man sitting in a Monster Hunter secret lab chair, sitting in front of an Apex Legend and Hunter Hunter statue with a Goku sitting on a Supreme box toothpaste. But it's like, I liked it when we were just hyped for the movie and the character, like going so deep in the minutia, and like, I'm like, cool, who's going to do it? Because right now, as we talk on this Zoom, there are thousands of nerds on Reddit and Twitter bickering about this for no reason whatsoever. And that alone is just probably shaving 2 years off of
their life.
They
should be spending that time looking up their new expiration dates on their COVID tests. I tell you.
Nay, any thoughts on this?
You know, I'm kind of excited. I've never said this before in my life, but like, I'm kind of excited for old white women because they, you know, they love, ooh, Harrison Ford to some older white women. Oh my God. I'm like, good for y'all. I am not as excited as they will be, but you know, I would be lying if I said I'm not going to watch it, because I'm going to.
Oh, we're absolutely all going to watch it.
Yeah, you know what I mean, I'm going to watch it.
We're all part of the problem.
I'm definitely going to watch it, but I will like to put a pin in making sure there is a hall of excellence for mom heartthrobs specifically for our moms, because that's a good one.
I'll tell you, the problem with that is Linda K. Clark wants to vote for the guy from JAG and Mark Harmon, and neither of them I can put in the movie sphere. So,
speaking of people complaining online, and I'd say with somewhat more valid reason, Netflix has announced a new pricing tier that will include advertisements. After months of speculation, we finally know just how much it will cost to watch Netflix with ads, like it was Tubi or something, at least in the US, and that's going to be $6.99 a month. For your $7, you'll receive 4 to 5 minutes of ads for every hour of Netflix you watch. There are 3 more expensive ad-free tiers with pricing depending on whether you want to be able to watch your stuff in SD, HD, or if, like if you have that sweet 72-incher 4K. Is this important? Do you care?
Man, it is important because it's our world in a lot of ways. Like, we talk about distribution models and exhibition and all of that. It factors in. And it's also so stupid. Of course, this is where it's gone. Where else was it going to go? The idea of when they introduced the concept of streaming giants, of all of these independent, in quotes, these individual companies, yes, that were going to be like, you could get this membership or this membership, and so cut your cable and all of that. And people back then, when this all started, was like, well, right, but aren't we all just going to end up in reconfiguring cable on our own because we have to have like 18 different individual memberships? And that's exactly what is effing happening. It's so stupid. It's so... There's people much smarter than me can explain why this is stupid capitalism at play. I'm not that person. I'm only smart enough to bitch about it. How's that?
Well, it is the same underlying principle that, you know, gets people to get rid of their CDs and then have to keep buying the same streaming music or movies or whatever over and over again because they get deleted from your thing or there's some change in the rule of the blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, I think around the time of the compact disc was when they realized, oh, the real money lies in not developing new artists, but just making people buy the same shit over and over again. And so, yeah, the cut your cable means now spend as much, if not more, you know, like getting all of these gajillion different services so that you can keep up with the things that you want to keep up with.
But to me, like when you start splitting like quality into price brackets, that this is the most like the firstest of world problem I'm about to say. But like it feels like almost dystopian where it's like we're paying for the media, not like the quality, you know, like that. Even in the as soon as HD came out, that was split and then it just kind of went everywhere. Then they were like, this is dumb and it's smushed. So this just seems weird and semi-unnecessary. I think what you could do is do a premium 4K bump, but I think like splitting 480 to standard HD to 4, that just seems weird and unnecessary. And it feels like they're trying to avoid the flack of raising the price again. But I think it's just better to be transparent and be like, hey, this was a business that wasn't built on a way to really make that much money. So we just need to raise the price.
I feel like what's going to take out the difference between SD and HD tiers is when a legion of people like my parents start to call Netflix to ask them to explain those to them. What's SD?
Yeah, they're just gonna be like,
480p?
Never mind. It's all.
What?
Never mind. You're good.
Yeah, no, then they all just will get free bumped to the 20. Yeah.
Anything not to have that conversation.
I need to check in with my friend whose account I'm on, whose account I've been on for years. I'm be like,
what are we doing here?
Yeah, what's the plan for us, girl?
Oh, that's why I asked going? About the parents calling. I'm absolutely a woman of a certain age on my parents' account. Partially because I paid for several different accounts of theirs, but I don't care. I get a real joy from signing in, and I intentionally use the kids button. You know, they have the kids profile.
Oh,
I won't
put
my own name. I use kids profile. And those kids watch some nonsense. So I hope your friend splurges for you, Nay.
Yes.
I hope she does you right. Speaking of movies, and in Nay's wheelhouse, director Christopher Landon, Lambast Studios over Day and Date horror releases. Last weekend, Hollywood Ends opened number one at the box office with $41.2 million. But the good news came with the caveat because that number was well under the studio's $55 million projection. Christopher Landon, horror producer, director of the Happy Death Day movies and Freaky, took to Twitter to call out the studios for continuing to use the Day and Date release strategy to, quote, prop up their streamers, saying movies like Freaky and Halloween Ends are used as guinea pigs, screwing filmmakers out of money in the process. Memorably, he called on the studios to, quote, stop sucking two dicks at the same time and choose one path or the other. Is this important? Do you care?
Oh, fuck yes. I mean, Chris Landon, first of all, dreamboat. Dreamboat. Like, and I say that as a dyke. I'm like, you are just the cutest, beautiful, most beautiful gay man. I love Chris, and I think it's super important. Chris makes a lot of shit. Chris really like pumps out a lot of stuff. He's very experienced in this, and he's seen the difference that comes from different kind of rollouts. And when I first saw that thread pop up on Twitter, I was like, oh, okay, Chris. Because, you know, I've seen people tweet themselves out of jobs before, and it takes a lot to really stick up for yourself, period. And, you know, like at the end of the day, I guess, you know, Chris is a white dude, so it is a different kind of position to stick up, you know, for yourself from. But regardless of that, you know, I think he's right.
I would be more inclined to hop on this bandwagon were it not for the fact that Freaky opened in November of 2020.
Totally.
And it's like, unless you have the Top Gun Maverick contract, which is like, we are going to just sit on this baby until X number of theaters are open or whatever the hurdles that had to be cleared. I'm sorry. There was a worldwide pandemic. No one predicted that. I mean, yes, theoretically speaking, in the grand sense, yes, he's right. They need to sort of figure out what they're doing. What does theatrical mean? What does streaming mean? Obviously, that's gonna change how deals are made, because so much of what people are getting on the back end has to do with, like, how did you do in theaters and yada, yada, yada. And yes, obviously, all that stuff needs to be lined up, and he's totally right about that. I just wish that Freaky weren't the one that this argument is hinging upon. It was like, dude, it was November of 2020. I don't know what you expect.
Yeah. However, Halloween Ends is, these are the kind of movies, and similar, like the Happy Death Day, they're a cornerstone of a very specific part of theatrical box office.
Sure.
And when you take that away, Halloween Ends not only has like well-established IP, movie star of decades, a
final chapter.
Yeah, final chapter, all of these elements of it. Those are the kinds of films that I think that tying it to Peacock, right? There's this whole thing of, yeah, I mean, of course, it's all machinations on their side of like, how do we drive business? And they would much rather have subscribers who are giving them set guaranteed amounts monthly than the crapshoot of who's going to show up at the movie theater. And to put that on the back of the filmmakers who then do get punished from it, like who do, that's money they do not make. Like, hooray for NBC Universal, that baby upstart of a corporation. But yeah, I feel for him on this. And I'm also just really thrilled that I got to use the phrase stop sucking two dicks at the same time on our program.
The ringtone available soon.
Yeah, yeah, you know, get it in.
Oh, Lord.
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're about to raise some hell.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did.
Maximum Film is supported in part by Masterclass. With Masterclass, you can learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace.
You guys know I enjoy speaking about Masterclass because I enjoy the classes, the instructors, world class. Terrible pun, but I mean it. I typically talk about the film classes because obviously near and dear to my heart. But recently I've wanted to get, there's a wilderness survival training I'm interested. But you'll appreciate, as a non-cook, there's a whole category that I enjoy that's just home and lifestyle that has cooking, fundamentals, things like that. But also in there, if you look far enough, are Penn and Teller the instructors of a Teach the Art of Magic class? Yes. Do you want to know the fundamentals so that you can bust those things at parties? Yes, you do. Is there a mixology class? There is. You can take it. There's also an interior design class, or a couple of sessions actually, from Kelly Wiersler. And if you are anyone who watches annoying design shows on the television or intranet, you have seen Kelly Wiersler probably as a judge or a host or something, but she's phenomenal. I highly recommend. So much to dig into. Why not try digging in?
Ooh, yes, indeed. So if you want to dig in, check it out today. Get unlimited access to every masterclass, and as a Maximum Film listener, you get 15% off an annual membership. So go to masterclass.com/maxfilm. That's masterclass.com/MAXFILM for 15% off masterclass. Now let's get back to the show.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, nice.
Boom, boom.
Oh.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Nay Beaver,
Alonzo Duraldi.
And sometimes it seems like there have been too many Hellraiser films to count, but we counted them for you, and the number is now 11. The latest installment from director David Bruckner goes back to Clive Barker's 1987 original and reintroduces the demonic concept for a new generation of horror freaks. And I really want to be a nerd and be like, actually, they're travelers from a different dimension, not actually demonic, but I'm not going to put Marissa through that. She's going to cut that out, isn't she? Alonzo, would you mind giving us a brief summary of the new Hellraiser?
Oh, golly. Okay, so there's a young woman named Riley. She is grappling with addiction issues, living with her gay brother, and essentially sort of disappointing and letting down everybody. She has a new boyfriend, which, of course, anybody in recovery would tell you, yes, what a perfect time to get into a new relationship. He compels her to join him on a scheme involving an abandoned safe, which they open, and what should be inside but a puzzle box. And they start messing with it, and, you know, bad things start happening, and our old pal Pinhead is back, now played by the wonderful Jamie Clayton. And of course, things start spiraling in a really terrifying direction, and it all comes back to a conspiracy involving a very debauched rich dude who is played by the great Goran Vishnick. Basically, the Riley's addiction issues will now find themselves writ rather large as Cenobites and sacrifices and lament configurations begin to make themselves known in Hellraiser.
Dun dun.
Yeah, I think to kick it off, I'll just ask, of the original 10, how many of the previous Hellraisers have y'all seen?
I've only seen the original, and I feel like I saw it in high school because I feel like it was playing in the background at parties all the time. I was, as you guys know, a Nightmare on Elm Street obsessive with a slight tinge of Jason obsession as well. But for some reason, the Hellraiser franchise sort of passed me by. And I feel really, you know, I really like to be smug about my viewing knowledge. So it's hard for me to admit that. It really is.
You've got it on me. I've seen zero. This was my very first exposure to Hellraiser anything. And I feel terrible because I actually did a Q&A with Clive Barker once.
Did you leave with that? Did you leave by telling him you'd never seen
it? No, I did not. Not about this, but it was a series I used to do in Los Angeles where directors would come in and screen films that influenced them. And so it was a screening of, he chose David Cronenberg's The Brood, and we talked about it. And so I didn't have to, you know, tell him that I'd never seen any rooms. So anyway, I'm a total noob here. I'm sure Nay is like, if she were rolling her eyes at me any harder, she'd be looking at her brain.
I didn't roll my eyes, but my jaw did drop. That's shocking to me. But I guess you do always, you know, sit here and be like, I'm not like the biggest horror buff. And I'm always like, you're crazy. Like, you're amazing in this documentary. Like, you know so many things. But now I believe you.
Yes, I was not lying.
But now me. I believe you. I've seen three. Have never been able to make myself go through, you know, all 10, is it? But very, very much so love the first two.
What about you, Ify?
Well, me, I know what a Pinhead is. I knew about the Chatterer. I knew about the big one. And I knew one that was just named Female Cenobite. So this is already miles ahead because that was the one lady was just female Cenobite.
Amazing. Well, this franchise is a challenge for Iffy because on the one hand it's horror, but on the other hand it is horny. So
talk about it. There's a conflict. Yeah, I was like, this the vibe is there, and honestly, kind of watching through this one, I really liked it because it was the horror lane that I like. I love a horror, you know, with good lore, good vibe, and all that, not just cheap jump scares all the time. And there's really none. The only one is kind of when someone pops up behind someone. But beyond that, yeah, it's pretty tame on the jump scares, but it doesn't mean it's not horrifying.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is a very clear, which I also appreciate, a clear nonsense premise, but this clear idea of, oh, these are our villains or whatever. These are the bad guys, and their directive is they can no longer differentiate between pleasure and pain. So there's this sort of BDSM element to both their wardrobe and their choice of like flesh piercing chains, like everything. Okay, sure. Someone flipped through at least one very specific fetish magazine to come up with these. So I get like, great. And then you're like, well, if I dug into it beyond that, I still don't really get what they need these people for. Also, I don't care. I know their thing. I know our people are trying to evade them. And they're also tied to this sort of box thing. I like it. I like a clean premise that gets me from A to B to see without like, all right, there's no deeper, sure.
That is the one thing though, where it's our Cenobites at hand seem pretty reasonable, if you ask me. Like there's a lot, there's in the final moments of the movie, there's a lot of like discussing and a lot of like back and forth to where I'd be like, oh no, you see, y'all got the game fucked up. I thought you would give me a blowjob machine and instead you are ripping my nerves over and over to the point where I am in constant pain. So I don't want this anymore. And if you don't have any of these powers that don't fuck me up, just give me the one where I'm sad about the things I did to get here.
So one thing that Alonzo touched on in the summary, you guys know I have very strong reactions to addiction stories
yes, about addicts. Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
Nobody told me that was coming, and I don't watch trailers, so I like to go into things blind. And that I was like, oh, Lord, it's not even just like a character introduction, but it's the shape of the journey she's gone through. It's a through
line, yeah.
Right, so we have this woman who's been clean for 6 months and is in this very tricky relationship with her brother, whom she lives with for free, basically. I just was like, the first act of it, I'm like, oh no. This all is just a study in familial enabling and very difficult to see because of that. And her talking about, I was like, we already met the himbo boyfriend, who was fantastic, by the way. Total babe, but I thought he was so charismatic. But their whole thing, I'm like, oh God. And then the second she took a drink, I was like, oh, that was, I had more of a visceral reaction to her breaking her sobriety I did anything else.
Than the Cenobites.
Yes. And then like the brother being at this like, you know, you have to draw a line at some point and how painful that is. But so I welcomed that as this foundation for a horror story because there is so much darkness there and there's so much to emotionally explore and that could like really add. And then I felt that they didn't go far enough with that. Like her conclusion and the decision she ultimately has to make about like what powers she may be granted by going through this puzzle or what's possible. Like there's a slight element of that, of either like vindicating her sobriety journey or, you know, resolving it in some way. But I felt there was an opportunity to have so much more, to have each of the deaths or each of the, sacrifices, because she's ultimately kind of getting to pick who dies at a certain point.
Yeah.
And to have that reflect the journey to sobriety or the self-actualization. It was so close to being really interesting.
Weirdly, that aspect reminded me of 3,000 Years of Longing, which we just talked about that long ago. This notion of like, okay, I know you're telling me that you're going to grant me whatever I want and it's going to be great. And it's kind of her having to realize, oh, no. These are all these promises are bullshit. And whatever easy way out you're offering me is gonna just blow back in my face. And so I kind of felt like her sort of making the choice that she makes represented a certain thing of like, this is me owning my shit and not just like doing some magical thing to get rid of it, which, because, you know, that's what addicts do. They do things to distract themselves from what they've done. And then at one point they're going to wake up and have to cope with it. But if she's choosing to go right to that and skip all of the glamorous parts, you know, that might be coming her way, I kind of felt like that was a resolution of sorts.
Yeah.
It was like a bit towards it. I just could have, it seemed like it would have been easier to implement that in other places as well.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I definitely see exactly what both of y'all are talking about, because there was a moment me and Emily were watching, and around the second death, she was like, yeah, this is wild. And I was like, well, I feel like this is kind of like an allegory for addiction, because everyone who's trying to help her, she gets in the way and they die. Like the brother is the clear example. The second person is literally trying to pull the thing that she's attached to away from her, dies. And I think then it gets messy when it gets into the lore building, the world building, where now people are just dying for horror reasons. That made sense, but because we introduce the true antagonist, and that's where it changes. And I, you know, there's a strong argument that could be made to the people in your life when you're addicted. And then towards the end, there's the option of resurrection using this, and her acknowledging that this is magic. This is just an escape. This isn't real. This isn't a real resolution. I don't want any of it. And then they're like, lament, and here's why. And I was like, well, can we just run through all of them where you explain exactly what everyone does? Because it seems like you're just, it was like, you get nothing. You feel the sadness, and you feel the regret of all it took to get here, and you have to live with that. And she was like, bet.
Bad. Is there a tote bag option? Maybe just have that.
That doesn't start with L.
Good point.
Lament, lore, Laudaret, liminal, Lazarus, Leviathan. What would you ask of us?
Alonzo, was it you who said that something about this, it being really horny, this Hellraiser?
Oh, I meant the franchise. This one I know is, yeah.
Okay, I was curious. I was like, oh, please tell me, you know, what was super horny.
Let's
about this
that.
One?
No. There's the past of this franchise has
definitely
been in the SNL realm, which I'm sure was like, if he was like, oh, I want to, oh, but it's going to be scary, you know. And those are the two driving forces in his life, is as much horny and as little horror as possible.
Yes,
but yeah, this one we're going in a new direction for sure. From what I've been told about the old ones that I have not seen.
Yeah.
Well, definitely, I think that was kind of surprising to me as I started to watch the new one, because it felt much less horny. And I was a little disappointed by that, but I was like, girl, you know, give it a chance. Shit. Like, not everything has to be extremely horny. I find that the addiction arc is, it's more, I mean, I relate more to the enabling gay brother than to the actual addiction part. But, you know, obviously in the first Hellraiser, like, the horniness in that movie is completely destructive, but that seems less sad to me than addiction, even though they both are really speaking to, like, the addiction and the sensation of being alive.
Yeah. And I thought that they were approaching the addiction with a certain thoughtfulness. Like, it didn't just feel like a character, you know, beat to hang a hat on. It felt like, oh, it was organic to the whole story. And I thought the setup of that, like the brother who, like you say, the brother was killing me. I was like, yeah, been there, my guy. When he's like, he says, I love you to her like two or three times. He continued, like, every time he's about to, you know, get at her or yell at her about something, he begins by saying, I love you. And I was like, oh, this is just textbook. This man is so worried about losing her that he's like, well, it's like you're constantly just you know, on eggshells or trying to like, ooh, don't scare the kitten out of the... And I thought they nailed that. And I really liked the actress who played Riley as well. She had phenomenal hair that was cut in this way that I was like, that was such a choice decision. It somehow gave her dirty kid energy. But also I was like, oh, that was like a fancy haircut grown out. You know what I mean? And just the fact, the small touches in this film, I'm like, there's thoughtfulness here. She, from the moment she storms out, she has this argument with the brother. She's like, I'm going to go live in my car or whatever. She doesn't say that. I said that. But from then on, you only see her dressed in her boyfriend's enormous clothes. I'm like, thank you. So it may not have been a horny franchise, but I was welcoming the parts of it that the only body objectification I got was the himbo in the shower. Absolutely gratuitous shot of this hot dude taking a shower. I'm like, zero reason for this moment, except for our eyes.
The actress who plays Riley, incidentally, Odessa Azion, is the daughter of Pamela Adlon.
Oh. No, really?
Yes.
Interesting.
And then the roommate with the British accent, Aoife Hines, is the daughter of Kieran Hines.
No.
Yes.
Good for those progeny. Okay, so yeah, the Pinhead, because I knew that the exciting thing was Pinhead was a woman in this one. The other thing I could not really figure out was the role of the Pinhead.
Jamie Clayton as Pinhead, oh my God, so fucking sexy. Oh my God, so fucking good. You know, she's the queen of hell, so.
The Pinhead, not Jamie Clayton, I'm assuming.
You know, who knows?
I don't know what I was up to.
Right?
Yeah.
What kept coming up for me in the 2 hours of this new Hellraiser is I wanted more Cenobite. I wanted more. I mean, even though I had to turn all the lights off and like blow out the candles to be able to see what was happening, I wanted more of those dark, gnarly hell scenes.
And it started to feel to me like budget decisions. I was like, oh, they built, you know, the whole thing is it ends up in this haunted house, essentially. Like, oh, it's this mansion that has a cage, a metal cage over, and it keeps the Cenobites out. And I was like, that's smart budgeting right there. You know, I only have to put one or two people through makeup every couple days.
This cage only allows one Cenobite from a wide shot to, you know. But also, that once again goes into the more wanting more of that lore, right? Because I was curious, movie brain, I got why that it kept out the Cenobites, but I was like, I'd love to get more into the research and hear more about this. And I'm sure we're going to get more because it definitely ended on a cliffhangery note with this evil dude getting turned into a Cenobite.
May I give one small Hollywood true story gossip about the evil dude before we go? So 20 some years ago, 15, 20 years ago in my youth, but when Goran Vishnik was on ER, Height of Fame, whatever, just have to set the standard because I was going out in Hollywood one night with a group of friends. My friend Paul was supposed to pick me up, texted, head outside. And I was like, sure. I was like, where are you? He's like, oh, get in the limo. And I was like, we have a limo? What's going on? Big stretch ass limo in Koreatown. And I was like, okay, I get in. My friend Paul is not there. Goran Vishnik is in this limo. End of list. It is just me and Goran Vishnik in a stretch limo. And I was like, hey, Goran Vishnik. And my friend Paul was laughing his ass off. And he's like, oh, yeah, Goran wanted to come out with us tonight. And he's coming from some event and they sent a car. So he said he would just get us. And you were on the way to get me. And I was like, yeah, cool. Super cool. I'm super prepared for this moment. And then we like stopped at a liquor store in Hollywood in the stretch limo with me and Goran Vishnik. And then finally got my friend Paul and then got some other friends. And so you guys have been his number one fan ever since then. Just saying. Thought he did wonderful. I assume it was all because of the time he spent in the limo with me 15 to 20 years ago.
That was a career shaping moment. Sure,
for sure. It really set him on a whole path of choosing sensation. That's where I led him. Yep.
He chose the Drea configuration.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, let's give that vote. And the way we do votes on this pod is there's three choices. Screen it being the highest, stream it being the middle option, and skip it being self-explanatory. So, Nay, did you want to kick this off for us?
I am going to screen it. I owe that to Clive Barker and his legacy. And it looks good. Like, it was very easy to watch and very pleasing on the eye. My eyeballs loved it. Like, it looked good. You know, I like turned on some surround sound. It sounded good. I was like, okay, I would enjoy this in a theater. So I would screen it.
Mm. I would stream it in the dark, as Nate said. Yeah. As dark as you need that. It needs to be supported in that way. I liked the world building of it. It does look fantastic. It is a shrewd use. It's an economy of means of with the budget they have. They did right by it. Like, a lot of people are like, let's throw a lot of crap. And this was a really sort of thoughtful arrangement. It did start to drag. I was like, listen, if I personally can move faster than anyone that is trying to escape a Cenobite, your people are moving too slow. And I had that thought several times. I was like, come on, my guy, let's hobble it. Let's hobble it a little bit quicker here, because it is nonstop slowest moving chases you've ever seen by the end. Like, they're in a mansion and just like, oh, is he there? I'm like, of course he's there. You've moved 3 inches in the last 10 minutes. Oh, my God. And then small things like, the horror of like, oh, she tripped and dropped the thing. And I'm like, girl, you can't drop shit. I don't got the energy for you to drop easy props. Oh, my God. But yeah, beautiful to look at. Love Jamie Clayton. Fun. And I once spent time with Goran Vishnik in a stretch demo. So stream it.
I think I would be a screen it because, you know, like Iffy, I am not generally somebody who is inclined towards horror films, but I liked how stylish this was. I liked the way that they tie the addiction narrative to the central kind of device plot thing. And I think that Odessa Azian is giving a really great performance. Like, we're seeing a lot of, I think, really great acting in horror films this year. You know, the amazing monologue that Mia Goth has at the end of Pearl, you know, and the cast of Barbarian. And like, I think just a lot of stuff that where it's like, you know, it's not just about the sensations and the scares and the taut editing or whatever, but like the actors really get more to do than just run around, or in this case, maybe walk around, as Drea points out. But yeah, I was into it, and maybe it helped that I didn't have any other Hellraiser baggage to take into it. But I thought it was very stylish. I liked Odessa Azian. Thought Jamie Clayton was very cool and a really cool presence in this. So yeah, it would be nice to see it projected at some point. This is one of the 20th century movies that Disney has punted to Hulu. But you know, one of these days, hopefully, it gets some kind of revival.
Iffy.
You know what it's going to be for me. That's a screen it. You know, it was great. I love the spooky vibes. I love the straps, the leather. You know, all we were missing was, you know, a few more like nine tails, possibly some leather back paddles, wood paddles. You know, check out the kinkery if you're looking for that. But you know, that's going to be definitely a screen it for me. It was great. It was fun. I really enjoyed the world and the characters. Like I said, you know, few bumps in the road, but I would love for this to get maybe, you know, even half of the 10 movies that existed. Also, just a quick note for me to laugh at and with my friends, all the weirdos online who was talking about Hellraiser going woke with the LGBTQ stuff, who didn't do their research on Clive Barker. Uh-huh. you know, shout out to those idiots. I wish them the worst, and they can rest in piss.
Fuck yeah.
We'll be right back after we hear from another show for Maximum Fun.
Her Majesty served Great Britain and the Commonwealth loyally for over 70 years. And while, of course, we feel a profound sadness, we must remember she lived a long life and died in such a way that I think many of us would want for ourselves. She was at home, surrounded by her family. And, of course, she was listening to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast. The Beef and Dairy Network podcast is a multi-award-winning comedy podcast, and you can find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're in a theater. The lights go down. You're about to get swept up by the characters and all their little details and interpersonal dramas. You look at them and think, that person is so obviously in love with their best friend. Wait, am I in love with my best friend? That character's mom is so overbearing. Why doesn't she just stand up to her? Oh God, do I need to stand up to my own mother? If you've ever recognized yourself in a movie, then join me, Jordan Cruciola, for the podcast Feeling Seen. We've talked to author Susan Orlean on realizing her own marriage was falling apart after watching Adaptation, an adaptation of her own work, and comedian Hari Kondabolu on why Harold and Kumar was a depressingly important movie for Southeast Asians. So join me every Thursday for the Feeling Seen podcast here on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Sophie Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldo,
Nay Beaver,
Drea Clark.
All right. Cenobites are a key part of Hellraiser lore. They show up when a puzzle box is solved, looking like hell, and they have a penchant for torture. According to the Hellraiser fan wiki, if Leviathan, god of hell, believes the person is worthy to become a Cenobite, they are taken to hell to be remade in a transformation chamber operated by the engineer. In the Hellraiser verse, some Cenobites take a form inspired by their interests or vices when they were human. For example, Cameraman is a Cenobite that used to be a human cameraman, but now has a camera eye. CD is a Cenobite that used to DJ, but now his mouth is a CD player. Let's say you open the box and the Leviathan has deemed you worthy. What form does your Cenobite take?
For starters, I think Cenobite sounds like something that you would get at a Cinnabon, but it's just like a little one.
Oh, yeah. Now, I think that's probably why they're called Cinnaminis and not Cenobites.
Didn't test well.
Yeah.
It is quite possible that my Cenobite would be shaped like a Cenobite, but, you know, that's... I asked Dave, and he said it would be a Popeye's chicken sandwich for me, probably. Like, the whole head would be, you know... Yeah, that's all I got.
I like that. I really like the idea of being in a scary space and seeing a flayed creature with some version of black leather, latex, open skin, and then a Popeye's sandwich on their head. I mean, what's not to fear?
Like the Mayor McCheese of hell.
Mine, obviously, everyone here knows I love two things in this world. Those are cats and skincare. And the irony of trying to figure out a Cenobite design that incorporated my skincare obsession when they already, their whole thing is like peeling back parts of skin. So I'm like, I would just be that to the nth degree. And then it made me think of that Doctor Who character that I love so much, Cassandra, who's like the last human alive. And she's just a stretched out skin with face on it, who just yells, moisturize me every once in a while. And they and like her minions come and like squirt water or something on her. But I feel like I would be a hybrid of those. It would just be so much skin. I don't know how that would be frightening, but
what about if it's one of those Egyptian hairless cats, but you would also constantly need, you know, emollients?
Ooh, yeah, like a hairless cat, but with a dewy finish. Is that something like
exactly?
So you're saying melding my two? Why choose one?
Exactly.
I shouldn't
do it all.
Myself.
You can have it all. That's
in
the point
this scenario. The world is my oyster, and my oyster is a dewy, hairless cat Cenobite. Is that what I'm saying? Okay, I like that. That also sounds like something that would really terrify the shit out of someone. If yes. that rounded the corner, you wouldn't be
just
happy.
Just those regular cats already make me unnerved. So, you know, like a big head on somebody with a shiny, you know, like application of SPF 15 moisturizer? Forget it.
I do feel it could, you know, that again, kind of back to the 3,000 years of longing, but also to this Hellraiser, that tricky thing of like, oh, you can make a wish. You can ask for what you want, but we will be interpreting it. I feel like me, the possibilities for the interpretation to go wrong are high there. If I'm like, oh, hairless cat and skincare, what can you do? Cinnabite me. That could go wrong. Real wrong. Yeah,
you could wind up in a cosmetics lab.
Yeah, yeah. What about you?
I think I would have, first of all, oh my God, I've tried to imagine my Cenobite outfit a million times.
Oh, good.
Because it would obviously be the most well-fitted, gorgeous leather, bustier, long, just luscious leather and gold hardware. I was trying to think about my interests. I'm like, I am not that interesting. I'm like, I think that my nipples would be fully operating torches, so I can light blunts and joints.
Love
and whatnot.
Make a creme brulee. I mean,
that's beautiful.
Exactly. Please, not the creme brulee. Yeah, exactly.
I appreciate the torch nipples in so many ways. A sentence I don't get to say nearly enough. But also that your leather design now has a purpose. There's a safety element. You need the leather to withstand
flame
the
retardant.
Heat. Do you know what I mean? You can't have fabric with your torch nipples.
No.
It's utilitarian. It's not just aesthetic. And good for you. I mean, that is the way to take on this whole new chapter of your Cenobite life. That's the thoughtfulness we're looking for.
Yeah, that's
Iffy. I can't wait to hear yours and be completely horrified by it.
Oh yeah. So I play lots of video games. I love video games. So I'm thinking either my flesh is molded into a boxy, pixelated shape, where I look like an 8-bit character, but very fleshy and bloody and pussy and gross. Or like I have a giant like Game Boy built in the middle of my body, and I can only talk through chiptune noises.
Yeah, yeah.
The other one is like, you know, everyone knows, you know, online, very painfully horny, always talking about eating ass. I turn into a giant mouth, mouth and tongue, with teeth, but I can't talk. I only like make gargly noises as the sound of wet tongue flops around as I float.
Do you roll? How do you? How are we? How's your?
I'm just kind of a floating
like?
Cenobite, so I kind of look like the big chomp wheel on Mario, the big black like chomp, except it's like gross and fleshy, and like you see my eyes in the back, kind of stretched out into. It's like someone took a rubber band to the back of my head and pulled every feature, but my mouth is wide open and it's just very wet sounding.
I'm telling you that you sound like you're describing a garbage pail kid. That's what I hear, and that also seems spot on for this.
Yeah.
So kudos. You know? Yeah.
Thank you so much. You know, just hitting you with some something to think about as you drift away to sleep.
Yeah. Someone please go sketch us all those, and if he will frame them and put them on the wall behind him for all of us to be haunted by.
Okay. Well. Thank you so much. thank you so much, Marissa, for coming up with yet another wonderful segment. But now we're going to roll right into staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Just go ahead and hit them with it. So who wants to start?
Yeah, it is the season where fantastic movies are coming out. And so it's just going to be great picks from here on out. And my staff pick this week is a film called Decision to Leave by Park Chan-wook. It is so good. I wanted it to be so good, and it was. It's sort of like a mystery, but also a romance, but in this super stylized way. It's just beautiful work. It's in theaters right now. You might know him from like Stoker, which was always a very beautiful film that was
The Handmaiden.
Sort of, Oh, yeah, I was building up to The Handmaiden.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay, which was definitely a previous staff pick of mine. Anyway, Park Chan-wook is so talented. Decision to Leave is so good. You will want to watch it 12 times. But just do it the once in the theater. It's expensive. Just, you know, budget your money wisely is what I'm saying. Okay.
That is a good one. I went and saw it, and I luckily knew nothing going in, which is always my favorite thing. And yeah, it's a ride. So I would recommend seeing it, but also seeing it not knowing anything, because it will take you to some places. I am going to actually recommend a horror movie because it's October and why not? Even though I'm already really thinking about Christmas, but then when aren't I? Criterion Collection, in addition to a very fun 80s horror section that they've got going right now with some great stuff in it, but I want to recommend a 1970s indie, Roger Corman produced, but made by the very subversive Stephanie Rothman. The film is The Velvet Vampire, and it is a movie about a young married couple in Southern California who meet a mysterious and alluring woman at an art gallery open. They travel out to the desert to her house. She has a dune buggy and also a proclivity for raw liver. And, you know, it gets wild from there. But Stephanie Rothman is a really fascinating figure, I think, in indie cinema and in American women directors, in that she, you know, she worked for Corman. She made exploitation movies, but kind of used the rules of exploitation cinema to sort of say things about feminism and about relationships and about women and you know, so this is a movie that does deliver the requisite like bloodshed and, you know, nakedness, but, you know, it's also really subversive and playing around a lot with sort of the vampire rules. And if you watch it on Criterion, as opposed to, I did watch it on Tubi and some other places, the Criterion version, I guess it's for the Blu-ray that Shout Factory struck in the last few years. So it fills your TV screen and the colors are far richer. Stuff that looks brown on Tubi is red, red, red on the Criterion channel. So it's fun and it's odd and it co-stars Michael Blodgett from Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. I don't know what to tell you. Check it out. The Velvet Vampire.
Nice. I like the title.
Mm-hmm.
I rewatched, I guess I've seen this a million times, but rewatched Child's Play recently for a podcast. And every time I watch it, not only is it just so nostalgic, but Chucky is so batshit. I feel like we need to see, we've got with all of the, you know, other evil doll movies out, we've got to go back to Chucky and remember how Chucky really was beating asses. Like Chucky is like, you know, Annabelle wasn't punching people necessarily, like physically assaulting people. Chucky is assaulting people. And I think that shit is so hilarious and amazing and wonderful. And if you have not watched Child's Play in a while, go back and watch it. And I mean, and as a franchise in general, like there's so many hits in that franchise. And then, you know, the new TV show that is just fucking stellar. So yeah, Child's Play.
Have you seen
simple?
There's a TikTok of this woman and her little kid and she has him in a Chucky wig. I've watched it about 104 times. I'm not even on TikTok. Someone sent it to me once and I like saved the URL of it and was like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. This is a grown woman pretending to battle her kid around the living room.
Yes. Absolutely. I love every iteration of Chucky in joke form. Like, we're dogs in Chucky outfits, kids dressed up as Chucky. All of it is so good. And I love how much communities of color rock with Chucky. Like, Halloween time around here, I live in Watts, I'm like, there are at least four trucks out on the street that have like a Chucky doll smashed into a door with some fake blood and some spider. I'm like, yes, we fucking stan Chucky. So Child's Play.
And if you're a Max Fun supporter, the extra that we did on this show like 3 years ago, I think, was a full feature-length Chucky commentary. It was me and April and Ricky and special guest Jonah Ray. So go check that out.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Nice.
You know, staff picks are always a fun time to, you know, show movies we love. And sometimes just show movies we've watched. And, you know, and I definitely want to, you know, connect and just get your own take, you know, let the whole facts come out. And also is just a great way to say another movie that Jamie Clayton was in, another horror-esque movie that they were in. And this was by none other than Nicholas Winding Refn. yep. The Neon Demon, who is, this was my moment. This was my, like, I'd say my Kanye 2020 moment for Nicholas, because I have defended this man for many a movies. And then I came into this one. And, you know, we can bounce back, you know, we can bounce back. But this definitely was the movie that came out. And people looked at me and was like, that's your boy. And I'm like...
Is it? Never met him.
I don't know her.
Exactly. Yeah. Speaking of Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, whoa, Neon Demon.
Love a staff pick that you don't want to rewatch yourself. Big fan.
You know, it's you know, add some flavor.
Staff threat. You know.
Thank you so much, Nate Beaver. Woo! Where can people find what you're up to? Let them know so they can follow, retweet, watch.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram and on Twitter at Nate Beaver, NayBeaver. And everybody, watch Queer for Fear, four-part docuseries streaming now on Shudder and AMC Plus.
It's so good. I just...
Alonzo. Well, Alonzo's so amazing Duralde, in it.
Dream matinee idol star, for sure. And I also found myself absolutely in tears. There was a whole thing from Osgood Perkins about his so dad good. That I was like, it was incredible. I love him as a director anyway, and...
That edited by a friend of the show, Dave Kittredge, who came on to talk about Real Genius.
Oh, bless. I loved it.
And I don't know what Nay's Cenobite outfit is going to look like, but the dress she is wearing for this outfit with the lace and the thing, and it's like, lady, you are turned out for this doc. I felt very underdressed. Hats off.
Oh, my God, Alonzo. I'm going to faint. I really can't handle, I can't handle compliments from Alonzo. He's literally... so fucking brilliant in this doc. No. So handsome, so charming. Ooh. I honestly, I'm in total and complete awe. I could listen to you for hours and hours, and I'm so grateful to have met you through this and to be like interacting further with you. I'm so happy about it. Thank you so much.
You are too kind. I will say, whoever lit my hair really did a great job. It'll never look that good again.
It was, I heard, lit by torch nipples. Yeah. Possible urban myth, I don't know.
All right. Dre and Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show.
Thank you, sir.
You're lending your voice, your mind, your brains to the pod. It truly feels good to do this with you. So, you know, don't stop. Get it. And you, the listener, thank you. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is the also wonderful Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.